Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. Beginning, middle, or end of the year, it's always a great time to take control of your financial life. And the Jill on Money podcast is here to help. Your questions make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and, more importantly, on your life. Follow and listen to Jill on Money wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Steele Talking. I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. It is what I love to do, is be here with you on a Sunday night. And oh my goodness, there's a lot to talk about tonight. Of course, Jonathan Lowe and Chris Tubbs are my producers tonight. I want to say thank you to both of you for making all these ideas and ideas you come up with as well happen. So I appreciate it. Hey, Jonathan, how you be?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm great, man. I feel really, I don't know, it's been an exciting weekend for some reason. I'm just happy. I went to church today. Did you go to church?
I did not go to church.
Do you remember how I used to ask you that question?
Yes.
All the time,
yes.
Every Sunday?
Yes.
It kind of drove you nuts, huh? Just a little
no,
bit.
No, no. I hear it. I don't expect it, but it's, you know, you work on Sundays, sometimes you get that question. And so I am just responding to the question. That's all.
Okay. However, do you want the time to go to church, or you just feel like, you know what, I'm doing just fine, you know, because you don't have to go to church just to have a relationship, you know, that vertical relationship. You don't. You can do it however you want to do it. But today, and I don't go to church a lot. Trust me, I do not go to church a lot. I used to be a church for real, church girl. For many, many decades. And, you know, so much has changed and so much has come out about religion and how it affects people and how churches run things and mega churches, you name it. You know, there's been so much change over the last, what, 30 years that you kind of know that many people are asking that question, what in the world am I going to do now? But I do believe that there are so many other options out there that can still lift you up, that can still encourage you, that can still be something that you really can believe in and accept. And I'm just wondering if you ever think about that at all, or is it just the way you are, where you say, I'm fine the way I am. I don't have to go into a church in order to be thankful.
That's great. I don't know if there was a question in that for me, but okay.
Yes, there's a question for you. What I'm asking you is, if you have gone to church before, no matter what denomination it was, if you were Protestant or if you're Catholic, bottom line is, when you get to this point, when you are adult and you get to do it any way you want, you don't have anybody telling you what to do. Because, look, that was my life, right? My parents told us what to do, period.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But I'm just curious to know, after all of what you experienced as a boy to a man, and here you are today, what do you think about saying to, could you ever accept, I am going to go to church one Sunday?
I don't see myself doing that right now. It may change. You never know what can happen. You never know what life will bring you. But right now, no, I'm fine.
All right, I'll make a phone call to Jesus. We'll see how we can get that done.
That's okay. I got him on the hotline.
You got him on the hotline?
Good.
Do you know there's a song we used to sing about Jesus on the hotline? No,
yes.
Jesus is on the main line.
Line. Jesus on
Did
the main
you ever
line.
Hear that song?
Yes, I've heard that song.
Oh, my gosh. That's amazing. We have a lot more in common than I know. Seriously, I never thought you would know that song.
I don't know it by heart, but I know of the song, yes.
Wow.
I have, trust me, I grew up and we didn't necessarily go to the full service, but I would go to Sunday school, you know, most weeks when I was up until maybe fourth or fifth grade. And then
wow.
as I got older you try to make, you start to make your own decisions a little bit more, as your parents will let you do. And so I didn't go to church as much as I used to. But yeah, when I was really young, my parents would take me and we would go, and that was it.
Yeah, my parents took us every time. And what's really surprising to me is I have met so many young people, you know, in my lifetime as I'm getting older, you know, the years come. And I'm blown away at how many of them say, no, my parents never took me to church. They just never took us to church. And I would say to them, so are you part of a certain faith? And they're like, yeah, we just don't go to church. So, you know, to each his own. But man, for us, you better be ready and shiny. Because you're going to church every Sunday. That's for sure. Okay, Jonathan, I'm going to let you go on that.
Thank you. I am curious to talk to you.
You're welcome. You're very welcome. I could feel it. I do want to ask you about all of the climate news that we're getting these days. And I think we're getting more clarity as to when, how, where, and, you know, what is going to happen. I am seeing so many articles when I'm researching ideas to talk about, story or interviews to talk about, and I'm just blown away at the clarity that we're starting to get. Are you seeing that as well as a trained meteorologist?
I don't think so, because I think there's been clarity on what the problem is and the steps that need to start being taken to solve it. I don't think there's clarity on the approach to solve this issue and the wherewithal, the impetus, the need, the drive to try to solve it. I think that's where you have the most issues with this is, if you talk to most scientists, and I will say most because there are some that don't necessarily subscribe to the fact of climate change or global warming or whatever you want to call it, and they think that it's more of a natural process than anything. But most scientists would tell you, we know what the issue is. We know that it's the CO2 levels, the carbon levels mm-hmm. In the atmosphere. We know what the issue is. The problem, and we know how to try to not necessarily solve it, but diminish it. But where's the need for everybody out there to try to make it a reality?
Well, let's just say for me, I'm noticing climate change. It is very obvious to me. Now, I am not a meteorologist. I don't have the brain trust that you have when it comes to this. At the same time, I am noticing so many changes and big changes. I mean, not small changes, but big changes. And I keep saying to myself, what can we actually do to begin to correct this? I mean, seriously, make a big turn towards a better way. And that's the thing I don't find in the articles that I read. There is no voice that I'm hearing that says, all you have to do is this and things will clear up and we can move on. I have a problem with that.
I mean,
you know,
again,
the clouds that I've been seeing lately, I know you notice them because you love weather. My brother Billy loves weather. I know he's watching. And I'm stunned at some of the clouds we're seeing today. Clouds that I've never seen before. And we've had some weird weather in this state of Minnesota. There's no doubt about it.
I don't think it's necessarily in the form of clouds. You can see the cloud formations. You can see that there may be more stark contrasts in the clouds. I don't think necessarily it's that's the main issue. I think it's, again, the extremes one way or the other. When you're talking about what happened in Las Vegas and the desert Southwest, where they had all that flooding happening the last week or two. When you talk about what happened in Tennessee and in Kentucky, Eastern Kentucky and portions and the St. Louis metro area, where you're talking about 100-year floods, you know, 1,000-year floods happening in those areas. When you talk about temperatures being near triple digits or above triple digits for basically a straight month in Texas. And I know one of my former coworkers is a meteorologist down in the San Antonio area, and I caught up with him and said, "Hey, how you doing? Are you being affected by all this heat and everything?" He's like, "Yeah, we're finally getting out of it, but it's been, you know, 3-4 straight weeks of this." That's when you notice these problems. That's when you say, "Okay, something. It's not just wrong, but it's wrong." And it continues to be wrong. It's a continuous pattern. And it continues to stack onto itself. That's when you start noticing that, yeah, the weather's acting really weird because there's more heat in the atmosphere and there can be more moisture stored in the atmosphere. And if you have things happening at the poles where the ice caps continue to shatter off, melt, and provide higher sea levels, more moisture again for the atmosphere to absorb, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. then that's when you're going to find more of these extremes one way or the other.
Yeah, so we'll hear little, you know, we'll read big, long articles about that sort of thing, right? You know, what's happening around the world and how it's affecting the changes that we're seeing. But it's even bigger than that. I wouldn't even call it a little thing. It's big. And I'm sitting here wondering, when are people going to start, like, screaming out loud that we have to stop blank?
They have been screaming, but people that don't believe in what these scientists are saying have been screaming back. It's been a screaming match back and forth for at least a few years now.
But are you saying that people don't really want to notice? Are you saying that they notice but they don't care? Because if they say, "I don't want to hear
all
it,
the above,"
but it's actually happening?
All
aren't
the
they
above.
Supposed to be reacting, saying, "What can I do?" This is what I don't understand from the voices of those that sound ridiculous to me. If it's actually happening in your backyard, if it's actually happening in your city, your state, your country, if it's actually happening around the world, we see video after video around the world this is happening, and they still won't receive it, then what should happen to those people?
This is where you get into a tricky. This is where you get into gray area, and I'm talking fog. I'm talking you can't see 2 inches in front of your face. Gray. Again, what do you value more? Do you value making certain people think and act the same way you do, even if it's for the betterment? Or do you subscribe to the tenets of the freedom, the liberty, the all that stuff?
When it comes to the change, for me, when we are watching the earth change. You remember that tsunami in 2005 in Indonesia? Do you remember when we were told, "Hey, by the way, the moon moved our axis," or something like that? They said it had something to do with the axis, and you would probably know that. And I'm just curious. When that happened, I said to myself, how come nobody's, like, freaking out about that? Any little change like that could really be destructive to this planet. So the people that want to say, "No, I don't believe in that. I think everything's just fine, and we're just going through a bad period right now." No, the world is screaming that this is a big problem. I'm not talking about movies, like I always say. You know, they give out these messages in movies. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about what we are witnessing as human beings, alive, watching it, seeing it, hearing about it, reading about it. What are we supposed to do with the people that don't want to change but going to make things worse?
I honestly don't know. All you can do is give them the information and hope that they're – and again, a lot of people need to get better, including myself. I am not excluding myself from needing to be better to take better care of the planet. But for people that straight up deny it and straight up think that it's overblown or not even a real thing, you can only do so much to give them the information. You can't, I don't think you can force them, you know, twist their arm around their back and say, "You must do it this way."
There are many
countries that will do that. I think you're going to get more problems if you do that.
Yeah, but look at China when we were going through COVID. COVID changed everything for them, just like it did for the rest of the world. And they went out and actually picked people up that kept leaving their homes. They would send these people who were actually paid to pick up folks outside walking around because they just want to be around. And they would go see you, come up behind you, pick you up, throw that person over their shoulder and take you back to your house and lock you in it. That's how bad it got, right? So I keep saying to myself, if it's this bad, when are we ever going to say we have to seriously do something about it? And what is that seriously do something about it? The whole world needs to come together, right?
All I can say is, and this is the only thing that I can really say that sums us all up, human nature at times sucks. It sucks. That's it. That's as simple as I can put it.
I just want to give all of our children, the babies that are being born, those that have a chance to become and live a life on this planet. And it's as though people think, oh, I don't need to do that. No, I don't believe in all of that. It'll be just fine. It'll be just fine. It's called ignorance. And that's where my challenge is. I keep watching it every day. Even in North Minneapolis, I see changes in the clouds. I see, you know, where we get really, really dry, and then all of a sudden we get a really nice amount of rain, and you just kind of go, oh, I'm so grateful for this rain. I am so grateful. I mean, I look to the heavens and go, thank you for bringing water into Minnesota, right? Yet we are looking at the drought of what? You look at Mead Lake in Vegas, and you're blown away. And what is the Salt Lake City?
The Great Salt Lake.
The Great Salt Lake, yeah. We have three major lakes that are just about down to a trickle. And I'm saying to myself, what do y'all expect? What is the Colorado River? Yeah. Seven states that pull on that? It's like you hear these things on the news, right? Sometimes, you know, the person delivering the information has a smile in their voice. And I just go, how do you do that? This is major. This is incredible. This is disaster. Yet you don't hear that rally cry from Americans the way I think we should be hearing it and acting on it. You know, remember World War One or Two, where they would put up posters, and the whole country would come together and say, okay, you know, loose lips sink ships. Remember that? That sort of thing. People came together to make sure we were in it together. And I don't feel like we are in this climate change disasters that are happening. We're not in it together. And if we're not in it together, how in the world is it going to heal? I don't know. And I'm not saying that you should know. I'm just saying that I am at the point of exploding, you know, emotionally, because I don't understand why people don't understand how important this is. This is when everybody in Whoville and that little boy climbs to the top and starts screaming. Remember that, Dr. Seuss? Are you there, Jonathan?
Yeah, I'm just letting you go, but we are way past time. Okay. We got to break.
Okay, we have to break. We'll be back. It is now 7:30 here at WCCO. Welcome back. Of course, I want to let you know who's coming up next. I'm very excited. I just saw him about a week ago, and I'm very excited to have Dr. David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University, join us tonight. And we have a lot to talk about. You know, politics is everywhere right now on all the papers, and people are having conversations about what is going to happen in November. Well, he's the guy that I really trust to come forward and really bring us some clarity about what some of the things that are happening in our world and what should be done about them. So stay tuned. We'll be back.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
I'm Dr. Harini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets uncomfortable. Banner civilizations, doomsday prophecies, and events that science still can't fully explain. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
My goodness, it is now 7:36 here at WCCO. Welcome back to Steel Talking. I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. It is what I love to do is be with you on a Sunday night, and this particular half hour is so important to me. As I said before we went to break, Dr. David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University, is joining us, and we have so much to talk about. How are you, sir?
I am doing great. I'm glad to be on your show with you tonight.
I'm so glad to have you, sir. Okay, before we get started with all the questions we may have, I want to ask you about political science. I remember taking a class through the University of Minnesota, just one class of political science, and I absolutely loved it. However, I've had discussions about political science with many people over the years I've been here at CCO, and some people have a totally different understanding of the importance of political science and how it's really defined. Can you give us your definition of political science before we start the conversation?
Well, the classic definition is that political science is all about the study of power. But I'm going to broaden it and say that political science is not only the study of power, but it's also the study of how we allocate power, who has power, what purposes it's used for. It's really all about, in some sense, the study of collective decision making and who has the authority to do things. I know that sounds like a very, very rarefied description, but it's accurate. What I teach, what I work with my students, is I spend a lot of time talking about who gets to decide what, who at the end of the day gets to make the critical choices that affect our society, that affect our lives. And that's really about power. That's what political science is.
That is the best description, best definition I have ever heard. And believe me, I've read many books about political science, and I'm just about overwhelmed with joy with yours. So thank you for that. So knowing how important it is to our country and to the world, right? We are facing some big challenges right now when it comes to understanding politics, understanding political science, understanding what it is that we are supposed to understand about how it all works and how do we get to where we are. Okay, so let's start talking about everyone that is talking about the whole FBI thing that happened with our former president, Donald Trump. And of course, people are saying this was, you know, an egregious sin. They did something they never should have done to him, and it wasn't fair at Mar-a-Lago and that sort of thing. When we start to hear stories like that, I remember this when I was in college for the first time, my first iteration in college. And, you know, we would have conversations. You get together with your friends and go, wow, that, you know, Nixon did such and such, and so-and-so did such and such. But what we're seeing and hearing right now is so egregious for what's happening in our country. I mean, this is really important. How do we disperse that information and try to get people to open their minds and understand how serious this is?
That's a real challenge at this point. I think one of the things that we're seeing now that we didn't see back with Nixon. With Nixon, there was an agreement across political parties that Nixon did something wrong and somebody had to get him. I remember watching recently an old rerun of a Dick Cavett show. People don't remember Dick Cavett, a great talk show host from back in the 1960s and 70s. And he had Howard Baker on his show, who was a Republican senator. And Dick Cavett's ready to pull his hair out about all the horrible things Nixon was doing. And Howard Baker turns to him and says, "Don't worry, we're going to get Nixon." And the reason why I tell that story is that there was consensus, Republicans and Democrats, independents, that Nixon did something wrong and he had to pay for it in some way, and they were going to cooperate together. We don't see that now. We live in such, I don't know what, such atomized or such separate worlds that there are a bunch of people out there who are absolutely convinced that the election was stolen, that January 6th was simply perfectly okay, and that Donald Trump didn't do anything wrong, and that the search of the Mar-a-Lago was wrong. And I'm going to come back and say that on all those grounds there are serious threats, all those incidents in terms of American democracy. But we probably should talk a little bit about the search of the Mar-a-Lago. Does that seem appropriate?
Yes, please.
Good. Okay. So keep in mind that, first off, no person, including an ex-president, is supposed to be above the law. That if you or I were suspected of a crime, of doing something, we would be expected to pay the consequences and to obey the law. And moreover, if you and I were suspected of a crime, let's say we stole something, I don't know, whatever it could be like that, what would happen is that the police or the FBI would go to court, would have to convince a judge that there is probable cause that if they were to search, let's say, my car or my house or my apartment, or whatever, they would find fruits of a crime. And so the FBI did the same thing here. They had to go to a judge, had to document and say to them, here is why we think we need a search warrant, why we think we may find particular things. They had to list what it is they thought they were going to find, and then a judge had to agree to it. And that's exactly what happened. And the reason why I mention that is that for people who are saying that, well, this is the FBI gone crazy, it's a raid or whatever like that, no. The Constitution was followed. The FBI had to get the search warrant, had to convince a judge, which is the check. And now what we're hearing in the last few days is that the FBI found quite a bit of material, including some of the most top secret information regarding some our nuclear program and nuclear stuff, of which there is no reason why an ex-president should have possession of those things. And so this is pretty serious stuff, because the search warrant, and I read it, it's made available, look at it, was arguing that Donald Trump is potentially being investigated for violation of what? The National Espionage Act. This is real serious stuff.
So the Espionage Act, get it. What I don't understand, sir, is why treason is not being spoken of. Why, this isn't this the definition of treason?
It potentially is. That's why I'm saying at least initially the warrant was doing the Espionage Act. It is possible treason, because treason and espionage are really very closely related. In fact, in many ways, the Espionage Act is. Well, treason is defined in the or is laid out in the Constitution. The Espionage Act is really the specific law that makes treason illegal. So we could practically use those terms interchangeably in terms of what's going on here. Now, just to underscore again for people to realize how serious this is here, is that treason is punishable by life in prison. And actually, it is still punishable by the death penalty, although the last time anybody got the death penalty for treason, espionage, were the Rosenbergs back in the 50s. But I mention this because this is about as serious as it gets. Again, coming back to it, there's no good reason why an ex-president should have possession of these materials whatsoever. This is the most sensitive, top secret information that the United States has. And one has to wonder, what was Donald Trump going to do with that information? Why did he have it?
I have so many more questions for you, sir. Can we take a break? Will you stick with me?
Of course.
All right. We'll be back in just a moment. It is now 7:49 here at WCCO. I am excited to have Hamline University Professor of Political Science, Dr. David Schultz, joining us. And he's joining us on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. Okay, sir, as we jump back into this conversation, we know about declassification here in this country. We used to be really clear about when that would happen, how long it would happen, how the presidents would say, or who was responsible for telling us, oh, no, we need to make sure we extend those years. Here we are looking at a president who's declassified, which is fine, of course, many presidents do, that are really working to make sure, really, I have so much to say, sir, forgive me. I'm just wondering, what does a president need to do to declassify documents that could affect or infect national security?
So first off, I'll point out, a former president can't do it. Once you're no longer president, you have no authority to be able to declassify anything. But if you are the president and you wish to declassify material, there is actually a formal process, a set of formal rules that have to go through, of which you have to then, among other things, you would have to identify what documents or information you wish to declassify, that has to be put in written form to say that I want to declassify, documents A through X, or covering whatever subject matter, et cetera, et cetera. And it has to go through a series of processes and procedures before you do that. To the best of our knowledge, there is absolutely no indication that the documents that Donald Trump had in his possession at the Mar-a-Lago had been declassified by him. Now, he's claiming and saying that, I declassified them. If there's no written record, no written proof for that, then they haven't been declassified. And I also heard, over the weekend, that his attorney, Rudy Giuliani, said, he was keeping those documents there for safekeeping. No, he doesn't own those documents. They're not his. That's not a place for safekeeping in some room in the Mar-a-Lago.
So if we know that this is wrong, why haven't we acted differently? Maybe there had been a stronger way of making sure that Americans knew we are going to protect our country. We're going to protect all of our laws. We're going to make sure that a former president does not get to do this. But that's not the rally cry. That's not what I'm hearing.
You're absolutely correct. And that's the part that's really interesting about it. So first off, the president had taken these documents. The Justice Department realized that documents were missing. Earlier this year, one of his attorneys said, no, we returned all the documents. We don't have any more in possession. And then the Justice Department looked at it and said, nah, we don't agree. We think there's still more out there. This is part of a longer investigation of which we still don't have all the details on of what's going on. I just mentioned this because what they did is they said to him, we want these documents, return them, et cetera, et cetera. And he didn't. And what's happening now, and this is the part that everybody should be cheering about, and it's not, is the fact that we're telling an ex-president, you are subject to the same laws, the same search and seizure requirements that any other citizen in the United States would be faced with if they were suspected of a crime also, too. And that's the part that you think ought to be embraced. You would think that people would be saying, yes, nobody is high and mighty enough to stand above the law. But instead, we're seeing all types of apologists ranging anywhere from Senator Lindsey Graham, Rudy Giuliani, to so many of his supporters just simply saying the FBI was wrong. I think the FBI and Justice Department would have been wrong if they let him have a free pass on this.
Didn't we know about this earlier, though? I remember a lot was happening at Mar-a-Lago. I remember when they were talking about really important things that were about to happen, and you had some mm-hmm. people from other countries. I don't know if you remember that, but mm-hmm. I'm just curious mm-hmm. to know if he was already doing this, and we knew he was doing this, but nothing was done.
I suspect, yes, because remember, he made the Mar-a-Lago kind of the alternative White House.
Right.
And we suspect that he probably brought information there. We as taxpayers paid a phenomenal amount of money for security there, for Secret Service there. And so I suspect there was suspicions that the FBI suspected all this, which is why they've been keying in on the search and making a request there. But yeah, I suspect he moved a lot of stuff there even while he was still president.
Mm. All right. Then finally, I remember when President Obama, they found in, what country was it in? I think it was a Middle East country, if I'm not mistaken, but outside behind a garbage can. Do you remember when they found his schedule?
Yes, I do. Yes. Yeah. And that's not good because you're not supposed to have that kind of stuff, let's say, easily accessible. Now, I know oftentimes, at the end of the day, or eventually, they publish presidential schedules like who's visited the White House and so forth. But all this is treated as as security issues because, let's be frank here, there are crazy people out there, and they're worried about protecting the president of the United States. They're worried about protecting America's national interest and national security. And so you just can't let information like this filter out like a laundry list or a grocery list or something like that.
Right, exactly, sir. I cannot tell you how grateful I am that you joined us tonight. I have so many other questions and we've run out of time, but I do want to hear one last thing from you. If there was one thing this country should do to make sure this never happens again, what would that be?
Well, the most important thing, I think, is electing individuals to office who have a respect for rule of law and who care about American democracy.
Well said. I will be hopeful in this moment. I will be hopeful. Let's just keep working towards it. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. David Schultz.
My pleasure, and have me on again soon.
I hope so. Thank you, sir. All right, everyone, just remember what he said. Remember the words. If you have to go back to the podcast when it's up and take a listen to it again, just remember some of the key things that he said, because I know I will. All right. It has been a pleasure dealing with this, talking about this, and there's so much more to come up in the 8 o'clock hour. I hope you will stick and stay with us. We're going to have Damon Jenkins, Senior Vice President of the First Independence Bank. Why are we speaking with him? It is the first black bank in Minnesota. So I am really, really excited about having him on at 8:10 and at 8:35. We're going to talk to the Booth Ladies podcast, and we'll hear more about the State Fair. We'll be back. Stay tuned.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on motherhood, wellness, self-love, and more. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
It is now 7:49 here at WCCO. I am excited to have Hamline University Professor of Political Science, Dr. David Schultz, joining us. And he's joining us on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. Okay, sir, as we jump back into this conversation, we know about declassification here in this country. We used to be really clear about when that would happen, how long it would happen, how the presidents would say, or who was responsible for telling us, oh, no, we need to make sure we extend those years. Here we are looking at a president who's declassified, which is fine, of course, many presidents do, that are really working to make sure, really, I have so much to say, sir, forgive me. I'm just wondering, what does a president need to do to declassify documents that could affect or infect national security?
First off, I'll point out, a former president can't do it. Once you're no longer president, you have no authority to be able to declassify anything. But if you are the president and you wish to declassify material, there is actually a formal process, a set of formal rules that have to go through, of which you have to then, among other things, you would have to identify what documents or information you wish to declassify. That has to be put in written form to say that I want to declassify, documents A through X, or covering whatever subject matter, et cetera, et cetera. And it has to go through a series of processes and procedures before you do that. To the best of our knowledge, there is absolutely no indication that the documents that Donald Trump had in his possession at the Mar-a-Lago had been declassified by him. Now, he's claiming and saying that, I declassified them. If there's no written record, no written proof for that, then they haven't been declassified. And I also heard, over the weekend, that his attorney, Rudy Giuliani, said, he was keeping those documents there for safekeeping. No, he doesn't own those documents. They're not his. That's not a place for safekeeping in some room in the Mar-a-Lago.
So if we know that this is wrong, why haven't we acted differently? Maybe there had been a stronger way of making sure that Americans knew we are going to protect our country. We're going to protect all of our laws. We're going to make sure that a former president does not get to do this. But that's not the rally cry. That's not what I'm hearing.
You're absolutely correct. And that's the part that's really interesting about it. So first off, the president had taken these documents. The Justice Department realized that documents were missing. Earlier this year, One of his attorneys said, no, we returned all the documents. We don't have any more in possession. And then the Justice Department looked at it and said, nah, we don't agree. We think there's still more out there. This is part of a longer investigation of which we still don't have all the details on of what's going on. I just mention this because what they did is they said to him, we want these documents, return them, et cetera, et cetera. And he didn't. And what's happening now, and this is the part that everybody should be cheering about, and it's not, is the fact that what? We're telling an ex-president, you are subject to the same laws, the same search and seizure requirements that any other citizen in the United States would be faced with if they were suspected of a crime also, too. And that's the part that you think ought to be embraced. You would think that people would be saying, yes, nobody is high and mighty enough to stand above the law. But instead, we're seeing all types of apologists ranging anywhere from what Senator Lindsey Graham, Rudy Giuliani, to so many of his supporters just simply saying the FBI was wrong. I think the FBI and Justice Department would have been wrong if they let him have a free pass on this.
Didn't we know about this earlier, though? I remember a lot was happening at Mar-a-Lago. I remember when they were talking about really important things that were about to happen, and you had some people from other countries. I don't know if you remember that, but I'm just curious to know if he was already doing this, and we knew he was doing this, but nothing was done.
I suspect, yes, because remember, he made the Mar-a-Lago kind of what the alternative White House,
right.
And we suspect that he probably brought information there. We as taxpayers paid a phenomenal amount of money for security there, for Secret Service there. And so I suspect there was suspicions that the FBI suspected all this, which is why they've been keying in on the search and making the request there. But yeah, I suspect he moved a lot of stuff there even while he was still president.
All right. Then finally, I remember when President Obama, they found in, what country was it in? I think it was a Middle East country, if I'm not mistaken, but outside behind a garbage can. Do you remember when they found his schedule?
Yes, I do. Yes. Yeah. And that's not good because you're not supposed to have that kind of stuff, let's say, easily accessible. Now, I know oftentimes at the end of the day, or eventually, they publish presidential schedules like who's visited the White House and so forth. But all this is treated as what? As security issues because, let's be frank here, there are crazy people out there, and they're worried about protecting the President of the United States. They're worried about protecting America's national interest and national security. And so you just can't let information like this filter out like a laundry list or a grocery list or something like that.
Right, exactly, sir. I cannot tell you how grateful I am that you joined us tonight. I have so many other questions and we've run out of time, but I do want to hear one last thing from you. If there was one thing this country should do to make sure this never happens again, what would that be?
Well, the most important thing, I think, is electing individuals to office who have a respect for rule of law and who care about American democracy.
Well said. I will be hopeful in this moment.
I
will be hopeful. Let's just keep working towards it. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. David Schultz.
My pleasure, and have me on again soon.
I hope so. Thank you, sir. All right, everyone, just remember what he said. Remember the words. If you have to go back to the podcast when it's up and take a listen to it again, just remember some of the key things that he said, because I know I will. All right. It has been a pleasure dealing with this, talking about this, and there's so much more to come up in the 8 o'clock hour. I hope you will stick and stay with us. We're going to have Damon Jenkins, Senior Vice President of the First Independence Bank. Why are we speaking with him? It is the first black bank in Minnesota. So I am really, really excited about having him on at 8:10 and at 8:35. We're going to talk to the Booth Ladies podcast, and we'll hear more about the State Fair. We'll be back. Stay tuned.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey, wherever you get your podcasts.